Welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for perspective and insight on global warming news. My name is Ted McIntyre, and this show is for the week of January 29th, 2015. Today we're joined by our frequent guest, the prolific commentator, Mr. D.R. Tucker. How are you doing, D.R.?
Good, how are you doing?
Great to have you with us. So this has been quite a week for energy news here in on the East Coast of the United States. They're all kind of interrelated topics, so let's put them all on the table at once. Today in Massachusetts, there was an auction of offshore parcels of the ocean upon which deep water wind turbines could be put, right? So that was kind of an interesting thing. Recently, President Obama has proposed that oil drilling, the bad fossil fuel, oil drilling would be allowed off certain portions of the East Coast from Virginia down through North Carolina, right? Mm-hmm. Did you hear about either of those, DR?
Yes. There were two great reports recently in the New York Times concerning this. First, a report on July the 29th from Diane Caldwell of the New York Times, noting that at an auction for parcels off the coast of Massachusetts, there was little interest from developers, and two of four parcels drew no bids at all, and the ones that did attracted substantially lower prices than other auctions in recent years.
Heartbreaking, right?
It's heartbreaking.
But let's go back. I mean, what do we mean when we say an offshore parcel? So this process, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, is that the federal government draws some squares on a map of the ocean after it surveyed it for how windy it is, and mm-hmm. offers that at auction to anybody who wants to. Has the idea that they can go out and put wind turbines out there and make money at it, right? Mm-hmm. And that what you're basically buying in the auction is the right to proceed to the next level of trying to develop that thing into a wind turbine site, right?
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
And so the fact that, I guess the question comes as to why it would be that after all this time and the opportunity there, only two of the parcels were sold at relatively low prices. I mean, you have to wonder, is it the cost of oil that is so low that people say, gee, that's going to last that way for 20 years, so I needn't build wind turbines, I'm not going to make money at it? Mm-hmm. Or is it, I read somewhere that there was a technological challenge in building wind turbines in that deep of water. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a question that gives pause, right? If these people think they can't make money at it and don't bid on it, where are we then?
The New York Times story suggests that there's this perception in the wind industry that the opportunities are in onshore wind. The story notes, quote, land-based wind products are booming so much so that the United States became the top wind energy producer in the world last year, according to the White House, unquote. So it appears that there seems to be some sort of a preference at this time for onshore wind versus offshore wind, although there's the obvious argument that we need as much wind as possible. On and offshore.
Well, so, I guess so the question is does the state of Massachusetts, and there was a call, we talked about it last week, for the new governor of Massachusetts to somehow make it a priority to have these parcels developed, to go out and find people and convince them that they should be trying to bid on these things. I mean, I wouldn't say it's a failure on the part of the new governor that, but these things have to be actively worked, I think. Is that a reasonable statement?
Definitely, and it shows why, you know, citizen pressure and citizen activism has to play a role in sort of urging elected officials to, you know, pursue a all of the clean above policy as opposed to all of the above. That's, you know, time to move away from, you know, trying to build up more fossil fuel infrastructure, as there has been some interest in some quarters, and going all the way towards clean energy, including offshore wind.
Well, and I guess to correct myself, I mean, Deval Patrick just left office, and he was a champion of wind, and mm-hmm. everyone's known about these parcels coming available for some time. So I suppose, in all fairness, the responsibility for generating that interest should have gone to Deval Patrick, who had the last several years to do that. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, I guess you take it and say that the new governor should take an object lesson in, take this as an opportunity to try and get ahead of the curve in the future so that these things are developed, right?
Let's just say that he should not let our clean energy future twist in the wind.
Yeah, you always have a wonderful turn of phrase, dear. So, okay, so there's this sort of disappointing result for the wind parcels off Massachusetts. We will keep an eye on that in the future. But then there was another disappointing announcement, but that had to do with oil parcels off of Virginia, right? Same deal, right? We're auctioning parcels for exploration.
Yes, it was reported on January the 27th on the New York Times that the Obama administration has announced plans to open up coastal waters from Virginia to Georgia for oil and gas drilling, which constitutes a win for the oil and gas industry and a blow to climate hawks. It was considered particularly controversial because this was just a couple of days after the Obama administration announced that it will ban drilling in some portions of the Beaufort and Chukchi Seas in Alaska.
Right.
So, and I think it was reported in either in thehill.com or one of the other sort of inside the Beltway publications that the Obama administration seems to have this unofficial policy of giving one win to climate hawks and one win to the oil and gas industry, and it seems to be this sort of hodgepodge. A strategy by the Obama administration, instead of again going all in on clean energy, they seem to be to continue to embrace this intellectually discredited all of the above approach.
Yeah, you wonder. I mean, there's the old saying about not wanting to see how sausages and laws get made, right? Mm-hmm. I think that Obama's heart is in the right place. I'm quite disappointed in the fact that they would put these parcels up, but is there some inside game where they say, you know, they can give this away because it'll never actually happen, and they get a win for it, and they're just trying to sail through the shoals? Or is noble absolutism on clean energy is that politically better in the long run? I don't have an answer for that, but it's tough being president. But you look at this and say, Mr. Obama, what the heck are you doing? You know, putting more oil infrastructure in off of Virginia.
And the question has to be raised, on some level, does this not, obviously not in total, but in part, does this not imperil this sort of effort by the Obama administration to sort of make sure that there's a climate deal in place in Paris in 2015? Because if you're going to say we all need to start moving away from fossil fuel while at the same time you're doing drill, baby, drill, does that not impeach your credibility to a certain extent in the eyes of the world? Because you know, if I'm you know country X, Y, or Z, and I'm also a petrostate, I'm going to say, how are you going to tell me to cut my emissions when you're going to increase emissions? There's this coverage of Obama's recent trip to India and how Obama could not get the head of India to really commit to, you know, a hardcore reduction in emissions. And you can easily imagine the head of India, Modi,
Modi, I think that's right,
name, saying that, you know, Mr. President, how are you going to tell me to cut my emissions when you're going to increase yours with this drilling off the coast of Virginia?
I mean, sometimes Obama gets accused of playing three-dimensional chess. Maybe he is, but you sort of, most of us mere mortals get lost, and it seems like it's inconsistent, and I wouldn't say dishonest, but I mean certainly inconsistent and disappointing what's happened there.
It's just weird that in the name of playing three-dimensional chess, he gives a win to a fossil fuel monopoly, so to speak.
Yeah, yeah. So speaking of fossil fuel monopolies and disappointments, our friends in the oldest deliberative body in the world, the august United States Senate, after last week declaring both that climate change existed and didn't exist, this week has decided that really, really it's true that the 35 jobs that the Keystone XL pipeline will ultimately give us are worth it, and they've spent the last month trying to pass a bill that's going to get vetoed by the president. So what happened there? What's up that, as the saying goes?
Yes, on January the 29th, the Senate voted 62-36 to approve construction of the Keystone XL project. According to thinkprogress.org, the bill will now make its way to the House, which has only already approved its own separate version of the bill, but it is said to be taking the Senate's version with its amendments next week. They'll iron it out in committee, and once it's approved in the House, it'll go to President Obama's desk. He has pledged to veto the bill, and at this moment, neither the House or the Senate has enough votes to override the veto. And Think Progress also noted that, according to the nonprofit group Oil Change International, those who voted in favor of the pipeline received a combined $31.7 million from the fossil fuel industry in terms of contributions. So,
well, I guess that lets us segue to the other intriguing piece of information that came out this week, is that the guys we love to hate, the Koch brothers, have announced a target. Make sure I say this straight. They've announced a target of raising $900 million, that's $0.9 billion, to invest in the 2016 campaign to make sure their political views, i.e. preservation of fossil fuels, are maintained, right? Did I get that story right?
That is correct, and Joe Rome had a great piece in Climate Progress on January the 27th about this strategy. And as I read his story, it occurred to me that this is a sign of desperation on the part of Charles and David Koch, because if they believed that the American people supported their vision of on energy policy, why would they have to dump so much money into the electoral system? You've got to think that they are not only unnerved by, again, things like the People's Climate March, things like these anti-fracking efforts in New York, and also recently the story broke about limits on fracking by the newly elected governor of Pennsylvania. All these
grassroots... And the total ban in Scotland, although there's no voters in Scotland, but yes.
Exactly. They've got to be so unnerved by this growing climate movement that they figure that they have to essentially dump this onslaught of money in an attempt to stop it. And the other thing that has to be kept in mind, too, another thing they have to be nervous about, is the influence of Tom Steyer. It was reported earlier this week that Tom Steyer has decided not to himself run for the Senate in 2016 in California, and will instead continue to use his efforts through Next Gen Climate Action to sort of press for climate action. And even though Tom Steyer has fewer resources than the Kochs, we did see in some of the elections that occurred in the 2014 midterms, Steyer's money went head to head with Koch money. And even though Steyer had less money, Steyer nevertheless won. David beat Goliath, and you see this financial Goliath very, 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 very nervous about being taken down by an army of Davids.
Well, that's the famous line from Bill McKibben, right? That we don't have money, we don't have that kind of currency, but we have the currency of our commitment in our bodies, and that's what we'll see going forward. Mm-hmm. Well, I don't know, DR. If anybody wants to read up on the any more on the links, we'll put up links to this those stories on the blog that's associated with this podcast. You can find that at it's a WordPress blog, massclimateaction.wordpress.com. You can check us out on Facebook. It's /massclimateaction. You can listen to the show there. Please share us. Please like us. You can listen to the show on your smartphone using Stitcher, or you can subscribe at iTunes. So there's lots of ways to get in touch and to stay in touch. So we'll close the way we always close, by saying that because we recognize the necessity of personal accountability for our actions, because we accept responsibility for building a durable future, and because we believe it is our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out, we must insist that the United States put a price on carbon. Thank you very much, DR, for being here.
Thanks.
Thanks to everyone for listening, and we'll talk to you again soon. Bye-bye.
Thanks for being with us. And until next time, be green.
Very cool.